It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to The Next Room. It's always a good day when I wake up, give thanks, step out into my small studio. My puppy is curled up down by my feet. I had been out of town for about 4 days, and I hadn't left her ever. She's a COVID dog, so we got her right before the lockdown, and so she's my girl, and we have this whole routine, and she flipped out when I came home yesterday, and it was so cool. Like, I had tears in my eyes because here's this soul that loved me so much and missed me so much. So she has not left my side ever since I came home last night. So it feels good to be that loved. I'm so happy to introduce people that are on this show that are willing to share heart-wrenching pain. And it's not that I get off on pain at all. I am like I'm the total optimist. I'm always looking for the rainbow. I'm looking for the horse in a room full of pony poop. I love good news, but because I do this show, I'm around a lot of grief, a lot of things that are sad. But what I have found that has come out of this show most of all is that the individuals that I speak with are here now to help other people get through difficult times, to take their pain and turn it around and reach out and help other individuals to maybe understand what they're going through with their grief. And so this man is right up there at the top. Conrad Leslie is my guest today. I met him through my good friend, Casey Gaunt, which I know you guys have heard about because I'm a big fan of Casey's. Casey connected me with Conrad and his wife, Paolo, and said, Jane, you have to speak to him. He's got quite a story. Conrad lost his son to terrorism. I know it's like you're sitting there going, you don't think about those things, right? You know, you pray for your children and their safety from harm every single day. You want them to make good choices. You don't want them to fall off their bike and skin their knee. You certainly want them to respect the ocean when they're surfing, all of that stuff. Or when they're skiing down the side of a Black Diamond Run, I'm constantly like, okay, be with them, keep them safe. But rarely do we sit there and think, oh, we have to keep them safe from terrorism. Well, something absolutely life-altering and shocking happened to Conrad and his beautiful wife on July 14th of 2016. So, Conrad, thank you for coming on, and thank you for sharing your story with us on The Next Room.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great opportunity because, I really find peace and joy in being able to share this story.
Well, I, first of all, thank you for the beautiful writing that you did. Gifts from Nick. I was sobbing. I'm sobbing and I was smiling through my tears because there were moments in it. It's your pain. But then there was this amazing shift in the story where magical things started occurring. And talk to me first about, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but tell me about that day and what happened, because your son was this bright, shiny star. He excelled at everything. He was this gorgeous, beautiful young man who was over in France on a study abroad program.
Absolutely. He was 20 years old. Great all-around guy. He was an athlete and a scholar. He was a scuba diver at 10 years old. He was a kite surfing instructor by 18 years old, snowboarder. He played sports in high school at Torrey Pines. He was accepted into UC Berkeley, and he went to do a study abroad program there in France. And there on July 14th, as he was walking down the promenade celebrating, the fireworks in France's, equivalent to their 4th of July here in the United States, a terrorist came with a truck and used that truck as a weapon of mass destruction to just, mow over 86 innocent people that had gathered there to celebrate that day. And at first, we heard the news in the television and we just went crazy, and I tried to reach out to him, and I couldn't. He wouldn't answer the phone. But I thought to myself, well, you know, he'll be okay. You know, I'm never really worried about him, like what you're saying when your son goes, you know, snowboarding down Black Diamonds, or when he was kite surfing big waves, or diving with sharks. You know, I mean, he was fat. He was 6'4". You know, very athletic, very fast. I thought there's no way. And what are the chances that he'd be at that exact moment at the same class with so many other people? And sure enough, you know, after, you know, calling and frantically calling the embassy and everybody that we could for several days, I think on the second days we decided to fly to France. And that's when we found the news. You know, as soon as we landed in Paris to take the layover flight to Nice, I called the Italian embassy because Nicholas was dual citizenship. And they just said, I'm sorry, he didn't make it. And those words still shock me. You know, it's like, for me, not making like the A lacrosse team or the special, you know, the advanced math grade, right, you know, was already devastating. But just to hear those words, he didn't make it, I just took things to another level that I had never been. You know, life with Nick, I used to say, was like a fairy tale, you know, and for some reason we always assumed that we would live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And after this thing happened, you know, our whole life just turned upside down. You know, we were so in love with life, but now all of a sudden I started flirting with death, because I knew that death would be the only thing that would join me with Nicholas. That's the only thing that was separating me and wow. Nicholas. It was me doing the transition. So before I was scared of death and loved life. And then all of a sudden I started being really scared of life, because thinking, how could I go on? You know, right. I was like 50 something years old. How could I live the rest of these years that I may have in front of me without him? And I started cozying up to death, knowing that, you know, it would eventually take my pain away and reunite me with him.
Oh my goodness. But so here you are with your wife, right? And you're both submerged in this unfathomable grief, and in a dark pit of despair. How did you start to turn a corner? How did you?
Well, it was dark to the most incredible. I mean, you can't even define how dark and deep and ugly this thing was. And making things even worse is the fact that, you know, my wife and I, we grieve differently, and just watching her suffer additional, it just even made things even more, you know, unbearable. Not that things could be any more unbearable than they were, but they did make things more terrible, because it's like, great, you know, I lost my son, and now here I'm losing my wife. And it seemed like it was like a slow motion train wreck that I could not stop, and I could see it. You know, she's just drifting away, and we were drifting away from each other, and I could see her, you know, just you know, really losing her mind. And myself, I started drinking, and I just had this flash of how our future was going to be. I figured, well, she's going to be committed, and I'm going to wind up, you know, a divorced man living in a studio apartment somewhere in Ocean Beach, you know, and just drink myself to death. And I looked at that option as a possibility. And then all of a sudden said, well, I didn't know what to do, but I knew I didn't want to go there. And I think that was a little bit, you know, kind of like helped me realize where it was going, you know. But what really turned things around were these messages that I like to believe came from Nick, you know, that really turned things around. And there are messages of love and compassion, and he's encouraging us to move forward and finding joy in life. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, how long after July 14th, 2016, how long after before you realized that you were receiving messages from Nick? And I don't think that you have to, you know, I'd like to believe I know those messages were from Nick. Don't ask me how I know. I just do. So.
Well, I think it was probably like within the first week after we returned home.
Okay.
You know, I was sitting. We got a telephone call from Torrey Pines High School, and they wanted to do a scholarship for him, and asked me if I had any photos of Nicholas and Torrey Pines, the colors, and wearing the Falcon insignias, you know. And I said, yes, you know, I'll go look. And I went into my computer and I have like thousands of photos of Nicholas, you know, and the digital cameras had come out and there are just thousands of photos. And I was going through all these photographs that I had not seen in years. Every photo was bringing up a memory and it was just so hurtful. It was just killing me. And I was just tearing and crying and just clicking, trying to find, going through another photo, another, just so painful, but I knew I had to do it to honor him. And then at that moment, my wife heard me crying out loud and she goes, what's the matter? And she ran upstairs and I said, I'm looking for Nicholas in falcon colors. And she said, falcon colors? And she started crying. And at that moment, a falcon landed in our fence, like 50 feet from, oh, our, from us.
Oh, man.
And stood there watching us. And we looked back and we stopped crying and we were speechless. We didn't say anything. And we just stood there like in a daze and we looked at each other for probably lasted like, it's what it seemed like 10 minutes. It might've been only, you know, like 4 minutes or so. And then the falcon flew away. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of the first signs that we didn't know. At that moment, I just thought that, oh, well, you know, I'm an engineer. I thought, you know, it could have been this, it could have been that. But then it just continued to come and continued to come. And with every sign, it just reinforced the message that there's something there. You know, somebody's out there trying to help us, and it's about love and compassion.
Right. And, you know, because you're grieving, you know, you're cozying up to death. She's in a dark pit of despair being a mother. This is your only child, too. I want to.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. How did you two get to the point where you wanted to fight to stay together? Take me to that moment where you feel like Nick had a hand in bringing you two to see the love.
Well, you know, it's it was another sign of that, and it was a very beautiful, beautiful sign. And it came with a dream visitation from my son and my wife, where my wife saw him in a lucid dream, and she went to hold him and said, Nick, I want to go with you. She was ready to leave. She wanted to check out, you know, and just be with him. And she said that Nick just looked back at her and with a, you know, kind of smile on his face. And he said, Mom, you can't come. You know, you still have to live your life and enjoy your adventures. And at that moment, she woke up and she told me, and right away, you know, she used to love to travel. That's how we used to get joy out of our life. We traveled a lot. And at that moment, that's when I decided just to buy a ticket, and we bought a ticket to go to New Zealand. Because she always wanted to go there, thinking that maybe that's what it was going to be, that to find joy in life again, like a mission for her. And we went to New Zealand. And when we were there, one of the first nights we were there, I had a lucid dream. And I was in this beautiful house, and I was out in the patio looking at the surf. And all of a sudden I realized that, wait a minute, this is not real, because the surf was just too perfect. The waves were like perfect waves. And I said, this can't be real. And at that moment, I realized I was asleep. And I kind of woke up in my dream. And there I saw Nicholas. And I just held him in my arms. And I said, there's nobody going to pry me loose from him right now. Nobody. Mm. I'm going to stay here. I don't belong here, but I'm not leaving anywhere. I don't care. I'm not going to wake up. I'm going to be here forever. And at that moment, he slipped away from me. And he said, Dad, stay with me. I know he said he left and he was with a smile. I go, Nick, don't leave me. Do you have anything to say? And he said to me, Nick, he goes, Dad, stay with Mom, move, go forward and find joy in life. Mm-hmm. And then I woke up and I told her that. And then 2 days after that, and during our trekking in New Zealand, we went to this beautiful place called the Blue Pools. And it was so beautiful. And it was just so beautiful that we started crying because we knew that we couldn't share this beautiful experience with our son, you know. And as Paola started to cry, I said, Paola, listen what Nicholas told us. He said, you know, we got to stay together, move forward and find joy in life. And if we really believe these signs that we're getting, we have to find joy in life. And at that moment, she said, yes, I agree. We have to find joy in life. And we looked down and we found this river rock right at our feet that was shimmering with the light that had somehow developed with like a crystalline formation on top of the rock with the letter J. in a circle around it. And he picked it up, and we said, look, joy, we found joy. And at that moment, you know, we took it home, and we still have it. It's one of our most, precious things that we have.
Wow. Yeah, you'll have to send me a picture of that, because I'd like to add that to the show page for today.
Absolutely.
Wow. Just extraordinary. You know, energy is, that's what we are, right? And I understand some people think, okay, this is a table, but it's made up of energy, where everything's energy. And, you know, and we have to, you know, when we leave this earthly plane, we have to just transfer our energy into another form. And I fully believe everything, like all the stuff that you're telling me, it's giving me those warm, goosey feelings, and the hair is rising up on the back of my, you know, hands. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So Gifts from Nick. So you decide to write this beautiful short story, Gifts from Nick, and then you're involved with an organization called Helping Parents Heal. Talk to me about Helping Parents Heal, because a lot of, you know, like individuals like myself didn't know it existed, which is a blessing for me.
Well, you know, it was a blessing for us because, as I said, you know, my wife and I grieve differently, and we went in different paths. You know, I kind of went more of in a scientific path, trying to find, you know, the meaning of all this through science, you know, through quantum, studying about quantum mechanics and particle duality and entanglement and how things could be so bizarre that we don't even know. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't there be an afterlife? Well, my wife took a spiritual journey, and during our search for answers and information, we came across this group, because, you know, it was still in our infancy. We're still trying to, you know, solidify some of our thoughts. And we found this group, Helping Parents Heal, that had parents that were believe in the same things, that were receiving messages, just like we were receiving messages, and they believe that their children were communicating with them, and that they're still there, just not in the same room as we are. Like, you know, Casey said, you know, when the veil comes down, maybe in the other side of the veil, but they were there. And having, in listening to other parents talk about their synchronicities and their messages, just made us understand that, hey, we're not alone. You know, that there are a lot of people believe this, because for me it was like I can't say it was a taboo, but it was the furthest thing from reality for me. And I was an engineer. I believe that, you know, we went around the sun so many, you know, 1 year, you know, 365 days, and some people get 100 turns around the sun, other people get less, and everything made very clear sense to me, you know, from a Newtonian physics perspective. But you know, getting a hold of this group and sharing our stories and listening to other parents go through this and how they dealt and how they became shining light parents instead of just grieving parents, just shining light parents that are shining the way to help other parents, you know, make it through this journey. Wow. It's just so powerful. And that's how, you know, I think we hooked up with Casey too, who encouraged me to write the short story, because if I wouldn't have written them, and I wrote like 10 of them, I would have forgotten almost. And it's not because I would have just forgotten because they weren't important. I think that my own brain was trying to tell me, nothing to see here. Like one of those old movies when they say, hey, nothing to see here, folks.
Yep.
Move aside. What do you mean there's nothing to see here? You know, there's something very important to see here.
Yeah.
So I think my brain just kept on trying to have me just focus on something else and just, you know, I guess push away things that could not be explained.
Right.
And Helping Parents Heal gave us that opportunity to network with other parents that have similar beliefs.
Yeah, kind of gave you like permission to share your story.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's permission and just encouragement and healing, you know, like the strength from all the parents kind of shining light in each other and helping us go through this dark journey, which is a very dark and long journey,
you know,
but it does get better, you know, with time.
Right. And, you know, just to have other experiences and other people say, I believe you, you're not losing your mind. You've lost your son, which is this, you know, the most painful thing. But I believe you. I believe that Nick is reaching out and Nick is trying to say to you, Mom and Dad, It's all good. I'm good. I will see you again. But, you know, you guys still have a journey. You still have your Earth journey to complete on this side.
Absolutely. And you know, that, and then just like the frequency and the intensity and like the third party collaborations with some of the synchronicities and messages that we've gotten, you know, at first I thought they were just coincidences, but after so long, I could not write them off as just random, you know, coincidences. I thought that there's something going on. Like another really touching story that happened to us was when we went to France, the group of friends that he had just met for like 2 weeks, and he was having the time of his life. So I'm really glad that he was able to have that experience, you know, because he had only 20 years in this earth, but they were, you know, really good 20 years. And when he was down there, he was, you know, he met a bunch of friends from all over the world, and they held a vigil for him, and they gave us a photograph of Nicholas, a large photograph of Nicholas. And it was our treasure. You know, we took it home and we hung it in a wall. But as soon as every day I would look through that photograph, you know, he was just with a smile in his face. I would just start to cry because I didn't understand it. And I just, all the other photos that we had in our house going up the stairs and stuff, they're all of our family. And I took the photos so I could tell you exactly what was going on, what we did, where we were, what happened before, what happened after, all the details. I could almost see a photograph and relive a movie. Mm-hmm. But this one is just a photo of Nicholas just standing at the beach. And I'm going, what? And I kept on saying, no, Paula, we would fight. I say, Paula, you got to get it off the wall. I can't have it right there. Put it in a bedroom, put it somewhere else. But I just cannot have it there in my face because I need more. I need more. And then one day it just peaked to, it was almost became like a fight. And we're just arguing like out loud. And I said, no, Paula, I need more. I need to know more. I can't have this. And as soon as I said that, Jane, I hear a door knocking in the house, and I go there, and it was the postman, and he had a box.
Oh, no.
And he says, this box, and I open up the box, and what's in the box? It's a photo album with the cover of the photo album. Oh. Was the same photograph that we had in the wall, and inside were all excerpts of what Nicholas was doing that day, what we were doing, what his friends were doing, how it was, and was just like filled with other photographs, and it really answered the that I need more.
Wow.
So that's why I think that, you know, that this thing that's sending us messages that I call gifts from Nick, you know, it has to do with love and compassion and intelligence, because it knows, you know, when we're really hurting.
Right.
You know, and it knows exactly what we need, and it has the compassion to make it happen.
That's wild.
And things like this, and like I said, the whole gifts from Nick thing is just full of other examples, you know, that just are just mind blowing because,
yeah,
you know, they require, you know, just not a synchronicity that happens to me, like I find something in the ground or something, you know, it's like,
yeah,
multiple people are interacting to make this thing happen.
Sure.
You know, and I say, wow, what are the possibilities? And I understand that given enough time in the universe, anything could happen and will happen, you know,
right.
Yet it's just amazing that these things were happening at the same time that we were like in our lowest and just thinking about Nick and
yeah,
needing it. And it was exactly what we needed to give us that strength.
Right.
To carry on.
Now, okay, so you're like, I need more. I need to know the backstory. Where was he? What beach was he on? Why?
Exactly.
Why is he smiling? Who was he with?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So this knock at the door, you get this box. Was it just one of his friends that he was with, traveling with,
yes,
that just decided
absolutely
randomly?
No, like,
yep.
Absolutely. It was,
oh,
like, one of the students,
my gosh.
That he didn't even go to Berkeley because, you know, they had kids from all over the world,
wow,
participating in this program. It was called the Innovative European Academy, where they take, you know, and I guess they put students together and they form a team and they pitch an idea. And if they get, and if they win, they get funded by Google and some other companies to develop apps and all sorts of interesting stuff. So it was just this wonderful young lady who put the album together.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And it arrived right at the same time where I
sure
was saying, I need more.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Nick's like, okay, you got to deliver this package now because,
yeah,
Dad's flipping out.
Yeah, you know what it makes me just believe is that I'm sure that just Nicholas, he's doing the heavy lifting. And
yeah,
if it's not Nicholas, somebody's doing the heavy lifting,
yep,
to make it feasible for us to do this, because we would never. We should tell Nicholas. I said, Nicholas, you got to be so careful. You know, you're our only child. And I was like teasing him, saying, no, I want you to be careful, Nick, because if something ever happened to you, we would not be able to live without you. And he was so prudent. I mean, he did extreme sports, but he was so prudent about everything. And always very careful. And sure enough, I think he knew that without these signs, we wouldn't have made it. And then the important ones too that I told you about, like finding joy in life again, that was just so elusive. I would have never thought. At one point, I even contemplated, suicide. I'll never forget. I was sitting in my upstairs balcony and I was looking at a tree, and I heard this voice come in my head and said, "You know what would look good in that tree? You hanging from it."
Oh, man.
And I said, "Well, how could that work? I'm 6 foot." To that tree's in that slope. I mean, how would that rope work? And
oh,
I was actually like trying to do the math. And then something in my head said, what's going on in your head? But so finding the joy in life again is so elusive for anybody that has a loss like this.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to get direct signs saying, find joy in life again.
Yeah.
That was just so important.
Oh.
And also the important that helped us, really get through this a little bit was like, just the importance of gratitude, because it's so easy to have focused on the loss. And if you focus on the loss, it was like a bottomless pit of darkness, because there's no end to that. You could just keep on going down mm-hmm. and digging deeper and deeper and darker. There's just no way out if you look at how tremendous of a loss you had. It's like being ultimately beat up and left for dead in the desert or something. You look at your situation, how dire it is. But then all of a sudden just focusing on the fact that, boy, we loved each other. We had each other for so long, it's 20 years and all the good things that came from it, if his friends, how supportive they are and all the things to be grateful for, by focusing on those things, that really helped a lot, and not focusing on just on the pain,
right.
And then also just the love versus the hate, because when it happened, I was just so angry. I wanted to go and fight. Yeah. I wanted to join some of the rebels, and fight ISIS, out there, and I had so much hate for the guy who did this. And then all of a sudden I realized that by having this hate in my heart, I was kind of converting it. Love that I had, converting it to hate and sending it away to this man who did this. And I said, I'm going to cut you off, man. It's just going to be all love. I'm not going to convert any more love to hate. It's all going to be love going to my son. So,
Ah, man, you are one bright light, Conrad. I am just in awe of this, your journey, and for you being able to be so raw and so real and authentic by sharing this story about Nick. And you want to know something? You said you had each other. You had him for 20 years and you had this beautiful, powerful life together, traveling and doing these great experiences. You will have each other again.
Yes, I believe that.
I believe that as well.
In more than one way, too, because, if you look at, Einstein's, special theory of relativity, he says that the past, the future, and the present are all happening now.
Right.
So in a way, I think that Nicholas is being born now. He's graduating from school now. All these things are still happening, and they keep on going. So not only spiritually, but even my backup plan's always like, the block universe, thinking about time, mm-hmm. which is another time for a different discussion, but my passion with time.
Yeah, I love that, and that we're all, there is a lot of dual things that are happening, and, we just can't maybe perhaps grasp it all. We only have this brain, and a lot of it, the quantum physics vibe of it, and parallel universes, and it's just all very, very fascinating.
Very.
Yeah. Well, I am thrilled that you would come on the show. Conrad Leslie is my guest today. Gifts from Nick. What I'm going to do is I'll put a link to the short story because I encourage you to read it. It's beautiful and it's uplifting and sad, all at the same time. And helpingparentsheal.org, I'll put a link to that organization as well, so that if anybody has lost a child and you're in need of a good organization, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about these individuals that are there to help one another. So in closing, Conrad, any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with us on The Next Room?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, I just want to confirm that there is a greater reality, that just because we don't see it and we don't understand it, something's there. And then not to judge, you know, the whole thing that we see, you know, just by the little sliver that we see, you know, just don't try to judge the whole the situation, because we only see a fraction of what's out there. And at the end, the whole is perfect. And I could just tell you with assurances that Nick continues to be a big part of our life, and his gifts, you know, continue to guide us through this journey. And there is a higher reality.
That's beautiful. Well, I want to thank Nick for being here as well today, because make no mistake, he was a big part of this interview. And thank you for the work that you're doing. And you're doing some great nonprofit work where you are now.
Yeah, you know, I became an adaptive surf coach, and it's a volunteer job where we help people with handicap get back into surfing or learn how to surf or just, you know, find his healing through the ocean, you know, either in swimming or surfing. So we're very active in that. Also with Wounded Warriors, and just to see the strength of these guys that, you know, some have lost legs and they'll just, you know, they don't even want me to, you know, push them in a wheelchair into the water. They crawl into the ocean.
Wow.
They say, hey, just carry the surfboard. Yeah, that's all I need, you know, and they just get it themselves. Just to see the strength gives us courage, you know, when we feel down, just because they say, look, you know, that's somebody who's fighting. You know, these are the people that are fighting every day. They have this challenge to make it, and they don't give up. So we're not going to give up either.
Good for you. Well, give your beautiful wife a hug, and thank you so much, Conrad, for coming on The Next Room. I'm very, very grateful you would take this time to speak with me.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and anytime. Thank you so much.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to The Next Room.